to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Greetings, world. Welcome back to another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today's June 26, 2016. Corey, how are you doing today?
I'm quite well. Another day in paradise. It's blazing hot down here. But I'm in my thick adobe walled abode, my adobe abode. So I'm pretty comfortable inside. Looking forward to it. We have a good guest today.
Yeah. So we have Frank Bacon this week, and he was on our April 15th show. We talked about blockchain, Bitcoin, the nature of smart communities, smart cities, smart contracts. And today we're going to bring him back on so he can delve a little bit further into the nature of smart contracts. What does that really mean? What's the difference between a regular contract and a smart contract? What are the benefits? How can this be set up? What's the mechanics of it? You know, what's different? Is it using something online? So on and so forth. And then if we have a little bit of time at the end, Corey, he's actually going to show us how easy it is to set up a Bitcoin wallet online.
Oh, excellent.
That you can attach to your bank account or some other source of funding, if you will. And also, for those of you that weren't listening last week, we had a show about the nature of good and evil, what really constitutes a dichotomy, and then how does that change once you observe it. Okay, that was a really good show. I suggest that anybody who's listening this week should definitely go back and check that out if you missed it. And so this week, again, we're bringing home the bacon, Frank Bacon, that is. And he's just going to talk about these smart contracts. And before we get into that, Corey, I do want to touch on something. I'm a big follower of alternative news. I have a few sources that I trust that I've verified in other areas, not only in my personal life, but on the internet, and just an internal knowing as well. And there's a lot of chatter recently about some attempted mass exodus off planet by these, what people would call the cabal, which I refer to lovingly as the ankle biters. there's an attempt by these guys to basically exodus. And so get on these ships, come out of the ocean from their underground bases near Antarctica, shoot up to the atmosphere. They got to the quarantine zone, which is, you know, interestingly enough, a recent physics article by a very respected researcher shows that they've just discovered these huge plasma structures in the high atmosphere around the Earth. Well, yeah, duh, now you found the containment field. And they're like, oh, this needs to be investigated further. Well, no shit. And I wonder, you know, the results, if they'll come out clearly of that investigation, what that is. It's a containment field. So I'm not sure if these people that were attempting to exodus had some sort of code or access to the containment field, or if they were just attempting to break through, and who really controls it. But it appears they got to just that point, and all of a sudden, and this, again, this is just something that I'm reading and seeing corroborated by multiple people and sources that I trust, apparently multiple Chevron ships that are shaped sort of like a triangle or a diamond-ish, if you will, come out of nowhere and start attacking and blowing up the huge cargo teardrop-shaped ships, which were apparently the mass exodus ships of the cabal, for lack of a better term, or the various groups that make up the negative interest on this planet, if you want to call them that. And so they said, you're not going anywhere, and started doing massive damage, which forced them to retreat and drop back into the ocean.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so I'm totally on board with getting updates on stuff like this. If anybody is listening right now around the world, if you have any information that's credible, verifiable, of the likes of Corey Good, I don't know if you guys know who that is, Corey Goode, just like it sounds, look him up. He's been verified and backed by multiple people. So if you do have some type of information, I should say, relating to any type of secret space programs or esoteric events that are happening right now in this year, we humbly request that you contact us. You can contact us on our show page. You can look me up on Google. You can Google Corey's name. Corey Stevens will come up as one of the first results. So that's just a little current
Corey
events
good.
Update. Yeah, Corey Good. So, Corey Stevens, you can get a hold of us and, you know, my co-host Corey. So, all right. now that that's out of the way, with no further ado, we will bring on Frank Bacon. Frank, welcome back.
Hey, Jordan, how are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing exceptionally well. I have to apologize that if it sounds really weird in my studio. My studio is a car driving across the street to a park, where I can take the show at a little more private, a little bit better pace, but I messed up my timing, and I apologize. So if it sounds a little noisy back here, my apologies.
Not at all. We can hear a slight hum or tone on our end. I don't know what our listeners are hearing, but I'm sure they'd be willing to hear the information that you have to share. All that is much more important than the little tiny things. They know how
For
we
sure.
roll. So. All right, welcome back. We just want to jump right into it, so... I know people might be wondering, what exactly is a smart contract, or what the hell is a blockchain, for that matter? So if you maybe could recap what we spoke about last time?
Sure. And my first foray into this on your show is a real hot docking experience, I like to say. It's just kind of you never know how much information you can get out in an hour. It's such an amazing period of time where this is all new. We're trying to formulate the metaphor and the analogy and the examples, on in real time. And the best way I can explain it is that it's almost like early email adoption in the early 90s, 93, 94, and internet adoption. And believe it or not, even a little bit, around that time, even in Silicon Valley, the real brainiacs at the time of computer revolution were not seeing the internet on the horizon. They weren't paying attention. It was the PC, it was all this software, it was killer apps. And as the internet grew, we formulated, or not we, I don't want to say we, but scientists have now come up with a number of different ways of creating what we call digital scarcity. And in the digital world, the nice thing about digital ones and zeros is that you can copy them pretty easily, and it's a lot like the Gutenberg press. What blockchain did was, and it's the underlying technology, blockchain is like what HTML is to the internet. Hypertext markup language is the basis of the language of the internet. Or to a better example would be TCP/IP, the transfer protocol, the internet networking
yes.
protocol. So what blockchain is just kind of the best way to explain it is like a protocol for software, a software protocol. You have essentially a database. Whenever you're trying to store information and move information around, and specifically for banking, ledger systems are just basic databases. If you have an account, Corey has an account, I have an account, we store that in the same, we're all in the same bank, we store that in the same database, centrally, firewalled off and safe. What blockchain did was come along and say, now that we have encryption, why don't we distribute that ledger or distribute that database so that everybody has a copy of it, but we can keep it cryptographically secure so that each individual participant has their information secure, but that the consensus that the network provides, in other words, the network now provides a kind of a layer of backup, a layer of supremacy. The nice thing about having a central server and having all your data on one particular spot is that you've got that trusted spot that you can go to manage the data. But if somebody gets into that trusted spot and changes that data, it could really have detrimental effects. What blockchain is doing by decentralizing it and spreading it all out in a decentral structure is saying, let's get as many eyeballs on the same ledger. Let's keep the ledger cryptographically secure so that individual people can look at what their data is on that ledger. But let's let the network share multiple copies of the ledger. And then we'll have this network audit this ledger in real time consistently through cryptographic cryptographic mathematical work. That's super hardware intensive calculations that are going on. And what will happen is you'll have what blockchain actually becomes is kind of like this distributed worldwide computer and a record and an operational process that's actively working all the time. So it almost gets a life of its own. This is a really important thing to understand about the blockchain. When we talk about the blockchain, there isn't the blockchain. Blockchain can be many different entities. The first blockchain that was initiated back in 2009 was the Bitcoin blockchain. So technically speaking, that particular piece of code has been running for 7 years with interruptions here and there, but literally for the last 3 years, it's been pretty uninterrupted. And it is a record that can now not be changed. And since every record is connected to this record all the way back to the genesis, back to 2009 when the blockchain became real, it's becoming infinitely and progressively harder and harder to ever change it. So it's almost like a life of its own in that it has a record that it's going to keep keeping on with, you know, executing this record keeping function on distributed computers all over the world that are being added to the system completely voluntarily, meaning there's no Bitcoin association that's getting money and buying computer hardware and building this. This hardware that runs this particular blockchain, Bitcoin's blockchain, is being provided by all the participants, the voluntary participants on the network. So if somebody were to come along and reduplicate that code, they can go create another blockchain, which is what they've been doing now for many years. As blockchain technology has been growing, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of blockchains now active and running. Bitcoin being the first, and then many others coming after.
G-Coin and Primecoin and so on and so forth. So Frank, just real quick, I just wanted to kind of simplify it for the listeners that maybe don't know about internet protocols. Myself, I'm just barely versed in these things. Would it be fair to describe blockchain technology? You described it as a set of protocols for software and other transfers and recordation purposes, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to describe it as sort of starting or piggybacking off of the internet protocols and the internet space system itself, so that it could distribute itself, and then once distributed, you know, users would contribute the additional hardware necessary to grow and expand the network and into something of its own, as you described it, its own life. Is that a fair description?
That's exactly it. In other words, there's no head to this Hydra now.
Okay.
It is up and running, and for you or anyone to say or come up and decide, you know, we need to turn off the blockchain or that we need to turn off Bitcoin's blockchain. It really can't happen without a massive, you know,
consensus,
solar flare, shutting all the computers down or whatever. Because, I mean, parts of the network go down all the time. I mean, there are always problems. But because that ledger is an actual database that's being shared across thousands of computers, when there are outages, like, let's say if China went down and wasn't able to provide its computational power, or all the miners in China, all the auditors in China, the people providing the hardware for their particular portion of the Bitcoin ecosystem, if they turned it all off, there's still the rest of the world that's keeping the ecosystem. Essentially, this is how it could be. You could relate this. As long as one person is keeping the computer code running and processing the blocks, processing the transactions on a minute by minute basis, Bitcoin will never go away. So you have thousands of nodes you'd have to shut off overnight and keep them off for roughly 10, 20 minutes before they started back up again. That's a very basic way of looking at it.
Yeah, nodes is the perfect descriptive word for that. I just wanted to touch on that. Nodes, you know, with one individual node turned off or multiple, it would still operate from the other central nodes that are working. So that's
It's a lot like Terminator 2. you shoot with shotguns and 9mm and 45s, and it's just going to take all that, and it's just going to reconstitute itself and keep coming.
It does elicit notions of Skynet, yes.
Mm-hmm. In fact, along those lines, the very next blockchain I wanted to talk about was the Ethereum blockchain, which was the one that's been technically it hasn't been hacked, but that's in the news today. So Ethereum is another network of DevOps, development operations people that wanted to software the world, you know, and they created an organization called the Ethereum Organization. They started another blockchain called the Ethereum blockchain. It's a little bit more technically, it would be like a scientific calculator compared to a regular calculator. Bitcoin is like a regular calculator. Its blockchain is pretty robust but simple. You know, it can do some basic stuff. When you go into the Ethereum blockchain, it's supposed to be more like a multifunction scientific calculator, giving you much more programmability, and that's where smart contracts come into play. So the idea behind Bitcoin was that it was the first instantiation of this technique called smart money. Let's make our money smarter. So if I traded you the money and the money thought, well, I went to the wrong person, it would know to come back, you know, something simple like that. And so when Ethereum came along to build their network, the blockchain network, a more robust network, or more functional network, they built it specifically for that vending machine process of smart contracts. Let's write code because you know what a contract is. That's where you come in. You know much more about contract and clauses and things like that. So this is just very simple coding that says, as long as you can tell me who you are and I can define who I am, then we can write a code between us that functions just like an escrow contract or a I'll buy your car contract or, you know, trade a piece of property or come clean my house or whatever. And we can make that executable in the code so that no third party has to be involved to come in and fix our affairs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, doing business with maybe like a cleaning company that's operating with smart or blockchain technology. You mentioned in the last show an example of somebody coming by to see a house that you had for sale and giving them an encrypted key, and that's the only thing that would let them through the door. Well, you could also, in your contract, establish some sort of key that would provide access for those people to come in the performance of their duties. And, you know, at any given time, you could use the blockchain or the smart contract to give electronic notice to the other party that, hey, I'm proposing an amendment or a change or this or that. I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can go with it. I just want to highlight before we get any further into contracts or smart contracts that my understanding of any agreement or contract or accord or treaty, whatever, is that it's a living, fluid, changeable, dynamic being, just like you're describing the blockchain technology. So to have a physical memorialization of a contract is something that's been ideal for businessmen and businesswomen for years, for centuries, thousands of years.
This is leading up to why, you know, the financial markets are trying to radically adopt very quickly blockchain technology. And it's not that when you say, you know, when we say blockchain, we're not talking about ubiquitously one particular blockchain. We're talking about what block, like we say human, and there's 6 billion humans on the planet. I say blockchain, and there's thousands of blockchains running on the planet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. An entity like a bank would, it necessitates that they would have some sort of requirement for real-time complex functions and multiple chains running in tandem or with, you know, master-slave relationships or rules, whatever the code has to be. But they're going to require multiple of these different types of, you know, maybe 6 versions of Ethereum, and one's been programmed this way and another this way and so on and so forth. And they're using those for their international transaction settlements for billions of transactions around the world every single hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a thing called the IFP or the IPFS, the International Planetary File System, which is another basically a structure, another file structure, another software. You know, it's coding of how we're going to start separating, information on the internet. It's like HTML is to TCP/IP, IPFS is to TCP/IP. It's a file system, and it could really distribute basically a worldwide brain, a worldwide data set. And Internet of Things tells us that we can individually code like specific items of data, and actually encode with that code of item of data is its instantiation point or its genesis point when it came into fruition. So it's going to really radically upset people in patent world. It's really going to radically upset people in like a copyright world, because, you know, the one thing people always said about the internet that was so frustrating is like anybody can get on the internet and just write whatever they want. That is the whole point, you know, that you have a voice. It doesn't necessarily mean anybody's listening to you. Right. You know, you go off and write, you can write a blog and have maybe 5 people find it in 20 years of internet searches. But the point is that now we can do that, and then we can create search functions and algorithms that can keep our data, the data traffic, rather than it just exploding in duplication and being reconstituted and constantly crammed down our throats, which is what advertising does. We can start minimizing the duplication of data and always show kind of an authentic origination of a data point. Like if this show could have its original genesis, authentic, you know, data point and structure, and then anything coming after this, we can always revert back to saying, look, a priori, here's some prior times that like you said these words or I said these words. You see what I mean? So that's right. It's time. It's bringing the time equation into things now.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to drop this in. What you're describing to me is similar to executing a search function or having highlighted search keywords in Word documents or PDF files, so that when you type them in, you know, it just goes through and you can see origination points and all sorts of different things. So having that combined with the Internet of Things is really important to me, because what if a contract secures collateral? Well, now you have the smart contract and the smart register of the collateral in that contract. You have the rights and duties of the parties. right? There's all these different things that you can use this for, and I think you've done a great job of doing an overall or general description of the difference. You know, everybody knows what a regular contract is. If you don't, go back and listen to some of our shows, go do some basic research online, get yourself a contract book. But if you do, and you're with the majority of us, you already know what that entails. And so then you would also know what some of the issues and common problems and disputes that arise from those are. In that case, or in that regard, I think you've done an excellent job of describing the differences of blockchain. But now, if you could, I would request, please, if you would just go into a brief discussion of the main uses, like the main primary uses of a smart contract. What can you really drill down and a general purpose thing that everybody can instantly benefit from?
Simple escrow functionality.
Okay.
Since we're already in the banking world, we're in the disruption of the banking world, and real estate is one of the biggest places that's going to get disrupted. The best way to explain this would be to say, I would put a smart contract, a particular use case for a smart contract, up with an escrow. And an escrow would be like if I'm buying a house from you and the house has to trade hands through signatures and then you get your money, usually that's a bunch of third parties that are involved.
That's right.
We can program a smart contract to do all that necessary third-party monitoring, you know, making sure you're who you are, making sure I am who I am, recording a deed. So the first killer app for a blockchain besides a smart contract is that it's a think of a Bitcoin as an individual smart contract. That's essentially what they are. Mm-hmm. The coins themselves are like smart contracts. There's only going to be so many of them in existence, and they each have a unique identifier, a way of identifying them that you have digital scarcity. So you actually have a serial number. It can't be duplicated because only one person should be holding this number. So you could actually assign property to that. So let's say you put your house up on recorded on the blockchain. Now it shows up as a piece of property up there, and then you want to write a contract that says, "Pay me $200,000 for this house, and I'll assign over the the ownership of this deed to the person that pays me $200,000."
That's and then come to this location, right? Just come to this location and pick up the keys. Once the money's been transferred, the code will be issued.
Huh? Right. Yeah, the whole thing could be done, you know, in a matter of minutes, and then the transaction takes care of itself. So what blockchain has done with money has blown away the banking world. To say that the banking world is completely obsolete now is an understatement. I mean, we are talking 50s technology and how to transfer. If I were to buy a house from you and give you $200,000, it would take, you know, weeks for the transaction to actually be completed.
That's right.
I can move almost any amount of value, just not any amount, within reason, let's say up to $1 billion, but keep it small. Let's say $1 million. You want to sell your house for $1 million. I can, through the Bitcoin infrastructure, I can transfer that $1 million to you, execute that deed and that escrow contract that shows that I signed and you signed and everything's, copacetic. And it would take place in 10 minutes and be absolutely, reasonably speaking, irreversible. And the longer it stays in the network, which is, in perpetuity, it'll stay there forever. But the longer it stays, the more impossible it becomes to reverse it.
So interesting.
That in essence is how dangerous this technology is to the centralized control structures of, the pain management crew. You call them the ankle biters. They're really the pain management crew. They're the guys that know how to, optimally
and the attorneys that support them.
Yes, and they're blood sucking ankle biter attorneys. So sorry about that. I actually know a lot of good attorneys that are absorbing a lot of information about blockchain. They realize that this is going to put them into a whole new spectrum of services.
The smart ones, Frank. The smart ones are actually getting over right now and transferring right now. You know, there are a lot of smart people in the law field. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I just want to stop for a second and address Corey. Corey has been into the blockchain and Bitcoin for a long time. We did some studies together in MIC, and I know he's got a lot of questions. Is there anything that you want to bring up, Corey, or anything you want to highlight? Your analysis is always so spot on.
Well, I'm curious. There's been a number of breaches, I guess, over the years, security breaches and things like that.
You're not kidding.
Yeah. So could you speak to that a little bit? I mean, is that just growing pains?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad that you actually addressed this question, because one of the role playing thoughts that I had was put Corey up to throw out that, you know, a platitude of not negativity, but like a counterpoint that's being brought up a lot. And every right. time you do, I always want to take it and at least hold up the rat like a mirror, like the rubber uh-huh. mirror, and say, bounce it for a second. Now think about this. The London Interbank LIBOR, the London Interbank organization, which is a way of associating bond pricing.
Frank, I have to stop you real quick. I apologize for interrupting. Yeah. For anybody who's not aware, Adam Lanza, the supposed shooter for the Sandy Hook false flag attack, his father was one of the persons who was directly responsible for engineering software that tracked down the names and addresses of all the violators that were directly responsible for the LIBOR rigging. So I'll just break in and break out with that.
Really good point to bring up, man. Really good point to bring up, because there you go. There's a perfect example. The blockchain is just blockchain technology is just as susceptible to things like what we're talking about, you know, as far as, you know, hackers and things in the space. The difference is it's an open hood. Everybody is looking at it in real time. People know what's going on. So the muckery is not hidden and then kept away behind closed doors with only a few people telling you once in a while or being forced to come out and admit it. So the bankers have had the closed doors for, you know, hundreds of years, really the last 100 years from the Federal Reserve. They can close the doors. Janet Yellen comes out, says, yeah, we've been thinking about it. We might change a rate or two, maybe a month down the road. We'll see. Goes back behind the doors. Blockchain, you can't do that. So when it was hacked, for example, this latest news is a DAO, a smart contract that was exploited on the Ethereum network. So the Ethereum is another blockchain network, the smarter computer. One of the guys that from a group, several of the people from a group called Slockit, or SLOCK.IT, Slockit, which actually are working on all the technologies for smart locks. When we talk about smart locks, these guys have been putting out a lot of the technology for it. They wrote this particular DAO, which stands for Decentralized Autonomous Application. Perfect example of a smart contract, a decentrally running, an organized, decentralized accountant, basically. You make your company a piece of software, everybody just follow the software. And so as the DAO, as the first really good smart contract running on Ethereum, its first purpose was to raise money for itself. And so it ran a 30-day kind of a IPO, we'll call it an ICO, an initial coin offering, you know, to the public. And a bunch of people bought in, and it got to be upwards of about $200 million they raised within that 30 days. Well, somebody did come along, find something in the code that they could exploited it where they could basically withdraw some of the funds and put it somewhere, but they still have to work within the functionality of the contract, so there are still rules, but they took a majority of the voting, let's say, privileges and some of the other things. So what the organization, what the ecosystem is thinking of doing is what's called, you know, a kind of a hard fork is what they call it, is kind of a reset, turn off, turn on again, and just invalidate that. So because the hood is open, because everybody's looking in at it, you know, it's a bigger group of people that can all just get together and say, hey, we found somebody over here stealing and doing something wrong. Can we just all agree to just first get this one jerk out of here? And that's exactly what they're talking about. Let's get this one jerk out of here, re-zip it up and fire it off again. So with LIBOR, you know, we're still waiting to find out how in the world, how long was this going on? How many millions were lost or billions were made or whatever? So the bad is, yes, it can still be, you could still have some upsets, some exploits, some things that can go wrong, but we're getting so much faster and quicker at repairing and getting back to, you know, the basis of normalcy when you're talking about blockchain technology. The damage that LIBOR did is irreversible. And prior to the LIBOR scandal, there was also the CME, the Commodities Mercantile Exchange, where a gentleman in charge there literally just ripped off everybody's accounts, wasn't accountable, didn't go to jail. Millions and millions and millions of dollars, we're talking tens of millions, were stolen from account holders that had a commodities account in Chicago for their corn futures. Or, you know, farmers were paying for their...
John Corzine, yes.
Corzine, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every time somebody unloads, and it's perfect for you, Corey, to ask that question, because it's a brilliant question, so I'm not attacking or anything like that. I'm just like, bring it on, because also reflect it and tell me how the national dollar, the U.S. dollar, is safe. How nobody has ever been able to guarantee me that there aren't other printing presses out there. There's probably printing presses in Iraq where they just run out as many dollars as they need to, and nobody's keeping track of it. You see what I mean? So,
well, you bring up an interesting point, Frank, because every time somebody in a situation like that, they're like, "Well, hasn't it been messed with, or hasn't it been hacked, or isn't it risky, or something like that?" This is the one point I always bring up. Well, what are you dealing with right now? You've got completely privately controlled piece of shit, you know, currency, along with a whole bunch of other piece of shit currencies. They're not really backed on anything.
Well, they're backed on debt, you know, because they say for all debts, public and private. And what blockchain is really doing, let's say, anagogically speaking, what blockchain has done for us, you know, in the 3D world here, has given us a method of credit again, which was the original constitutional money, which was credited money into the country.
Your reputation was your credit, and how you were known in the community for the value that you produced directly, either tangibly or intangibly, is sort of aligned you automatically into the role in society that you needed to play. And as long as you performed that role honorably, people would invest in you by extending you some sort of lines of credit based on your credit value. I'm so glad you touched on that, Frank. Thank you so much for that. Most people fail to understand that.
No, and that's... sorry about the plane overhead. That's the nice thing about what I've seen with blockchain is that right now, if you look at Bitcoin represents roughly a $10 billion ecosystem. So there aren't many countries out there that have even $10 billion in gross domestic output. You know, we're talking smaller countries and things like that. But what's interesting about, you know, a $10 billion ecosystem right now is that it's available to almost everybody on the planet. We're talking at least 5 billion people unbanked on the planet, which means everybody that's homeless here in the United States has just as much access as an Ethiopian farmer does with a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So as far as an even playing field, I happen to feel, and you don't have to quote me on this because I'm saying it on your show, but I happen to feel that this particular blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain, is going to be worth $1 trillion very soon, at least, by the 2020 or 2025, because I see a massive reorganization of wealth transfer going on in the world as we speak right now. And Brexit is a part of it. And that's another reason why I wanted to come on your show, is because I've been waiting for the 24th of June. That was the 1 year anniversary of something very important to me. And since then, Brexit came the day before. And then once we knew that the world wasn't nuked, it was important for me to start coming out and explaining to people, hey, this is happening. You don't have to believe me, and I don't care if you really do, but this is what's happening. You know, the breakaway civilization is going on. Money is dead. If you still want to use it, it's just like while it's on fire. You better use it quickly because it's burning up in your hand as we speak.
That's a good way to describe it.
See? Yeah. Well, they're blood-soaked rags of debt, and the debt is never going to be able to be paid off with the generation that's currently on the planet. So they've endeared generations ahead of us to paying off something that they never should have even been involved in the first place. We shouldn't even be paying debts at this point.
Yeah, the whole thing's a fraud, and if you can prove the fraud, it always extends to the origination of the fraud, like when it was the inducement point. So we don't have a debt. You have individual debts, you've got cross corporation debts, you've got all these different types of things, but we don't have a national debt.
Is totally specifically now we're in a jubilee. Farce. We're in a jubilee setting.
Yeah,
now.
We've already Shemitiah. You know, the year of the Shemitiah and all these things that happen in every 70 years, a nation is either has to reorganize under bankruptcy or either declare a jubilee or request a jubilee from an ecclesiastical, ruling authority, which would be in this case the Vatican. And Frank, I do want to jump in real quick. We're about, let's say, 3/4 of the way through the show. A lot of things that come up, with regular contracts is breaches, not security breaches. That was a good point, Corey, but I mean like contract breaches. You agreed to perform this way, you didn't perform this way, and now I have to spend my fucking time and energy to go into court or hire some, skis bag attorney, or maybe possibly you've got a good in-house counsel that's a real up-and-comer. That's two sides of the coin. But still, you've got to invest your time and your money to go prove, like, positively prove that this person agreed to this, number one, they didn't perform number two, and then you sent them all your good graces and all the conditions, precedent and stuff like that, which is giving notice and so on and so forth. And that takes time, money, it's costly. With a smart contract, it seems like the performance of the parties could be monitored, or there could be some sort of clause in the smart contract that says you're required to electronically check in with an update here and there, with some sort of sworn affidavit, yada yada yada. And then if you fail to make an update, well, that's okay. We're not going to punish you, but we'll take three or more of those as a breach. And the proof of a failure notification in the smart contract for you to make that update, that's proof that you breached and you didn't perform as agreed. Right? Mm-hmm. That's just one tiny example, but I want to bring that up as how easy it is to resolve these things. And
well, one
do you
of the
know
things,
what that would do?
This is one of the good, the other good points to bring up, I'm really glad that you did, is that a lot of groups out there have come together and started creating third-party arbitration groups that are based on like common law and other previous examples that we've had in ancient legal statutes and things like that. And one's called DAMN, and I cannot remember what it stands for, but it's a mutual arbitration agreement system that is also a smart contract that could be executed. So you could almost have smart contracts covering other contracts. So if you're going to write a contract, we're going to write a contract together, we might want to go to Corey, who's written an arbitration contract and somehow link to his arbitration. And maybe his arbitration contract has enough users that are putting back feedback, you know, kind of like eBay in feedback, you know, is this a good person to deal with? So we're going to get rid of, you know, insurance companies, we're going to get rid of
lawyers, credit companies, everything.
third-party guarantors, because it goes back to the point that Corey brought up, is like, has it been hacked? Yes, and so has everything else on the planet. The NSA has been hacked. NASA's been hacked. You know, the Daily Mail has been hacked. The New York Times has been hacked. The major a really good show on TV right now, and we talked about it, Mr. Robot, is such an important meme right now that's in the collective conscience. If you go and you watch that show and you see the sheer chicanery and stuff that goes on, hacking is a very easy thing to do. You know, I'm a happily admitted hacker, maybe a white hack, but I'm more of a gray hatter. You know, I do what I do. I know what I know. I don't go around making a living out of it. But it's so easy to hack so many things. You know, hack the body, hack computer networks, hack, you know, social systems, that kind of stuff. You kind of want people at that level, because as one great blockchain scientist said, that the blockchain is like a sewer rat. I mean, it can be exposed to the worst food, the worst water, the worst, you know, sewage, air, everything, and it's still out there living, eating, breathing. You can't kill it. It's like a cockroach. And the more people you can throw at this that can try to bring it down, the better, because everybody's eyeballs are on it. So we see... when the code is being, you know, played with, or we see when people are doing something, it's right out in the open. Oh, somebody just, you know, sold 1 million bitcoins all at once. Well, that's going to crash the price. That's going to do a bunch. People could relax for a minute, look at that, back off for a while, see it for themselves rather than waiting for the news. They can dive in there and see it in real time. You know what I mean? So it's we're no longer at the behest of the markets that are controlled and organized and owned by the rich, the rich state crafters that have been managing these technologies and these techniques. The supply of goodwill is now being redistributed across the world. Now, associating that goodwill with back to resources like gold or silver or things like that, that's the part where you want mainly people not to be able to muck around with it. So the better thing is let the hackers go in there and mess with everything, because right now there's a collective group of private hackers that are managing our money supply, which is killing us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's putting us all in debt. It's, you know, they get to play around with it on the back. Look, 2008 was the unveiling. In 2008, they broke the banking system. The banking system broke. It broke physically. It was done. And all they did was have to get permission not to be thrown in jail. That's all
That's
they did.
Right.
They ran after the guys in Congress. They begged, borrowed, they scared them with martial law. They said, you got to let us keep running this scam, because otherwise people will just kill us and kill you, and it'll be, you know, mass murder. That's exactly what probably would have and should have happened, was we'd get over a 2-year, you know, purge, just like these movies that are coming out, and, you know, the movie The Purge. Yeah, they purged the bankers all in one night if we went like Iceland and fired them, put them in jail, or guillotined them, not that we should do that, but, you know, got rid of them. Then we could have very easily reset our gross domestic product, our output, our all kinds of things. And a lot of rich people would have been very upset about that. But we're talking about a small group of a few people that everybody is associating to, like, they earned it. They didn't earn it. They're in a position they've worked hard, they've earned things, but that doesn't mean a 400 millionaire or a guy with $4 billion really worked, $4 billion worth of work.
Absolutely not. They use other people's money. They start up. They get their own money. Then they go invest with other corrupt people and get more money. And then it just keeps going. And then at one point, it's just not enough anymore.
Simplicity.
It becomes just, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I also want to, I want to jump back to Corey because he's got a lot of good points. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up or have any questions about what we talked about so far? Because, you really have a good way of getting right to the root, of these important issues about what we're talking about.
Well, I would say I think it's a pretty exciting technology. It makes perfect sense, the decentralization. We see it in a lot of ways. The internet itself, probably you could say, was a form of decentralization of information. Although I'm sure it has, there are certain controls and there's certain factors that influence it heavily, but I'm just watching all this stuff unfold, and the one thing I would like to go into, if we have some time, would be maybe we could do that sample a bit Bitcoin exchange. Let me talk more specifically on that.
Did either of you set up a Bitcoin wallet yet?
No, I actually would like to do that, and Corey and I can do some more, but I have some things prepped in order to do that on my computer.
Sure.
So before we do that, I'm sorry, Frank. I just want to kind of recap for anybody who's just breaking in or just listening. Smart contracts. This is probably my favorite episode so far. I gotta tell you, stuff I deal with as a wordsmith every single day could be so easily resolved with stuff like this, and it's endless possibilities. I've got so many things that I'm thinking of right now. But I will say,
Jordan, what I need to do is plug you into my network. I need to get you involved with some people out there so you can maybe even help them write the smart contracts. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like your wordsmithing skills need to be applied to, Loctite smart contracts.
And there's all sorts of little techniques that people are using to wiggle out of contracts now that I've had to deal with face to face that could definitely be key points or foundational structures to build around. And so, I mean, assimilating existing agreements or contracts into a smart blockchain system is something that I think our listeners would find really useful. If you could, just before we do the example of setting up, if you could briefly touch on that, because we're almost out of time. How exactly would you go about that? What's the best one to use right now? Is it Ethereum? Is it something else? How would you assimilate
some
documents?
This is a really, really good question. And this gets into, almost where I'm talking like a financial expert and giving advice. So I, once again, this is not the financial world. We're talking about, the world of goodwill. And this is just one of these, this is my thought. I can't recommend anybody do anything. My recommendations are I keep it to myself, mind my own business. But here's what I did a while ago. And that's what I'll tell you is my story. But I knew everything was going this way many years ago. And I adopted Coinbase. Coinbase is a wallet provider. So think of them as like a banker. So they'll work the Bitcoin ecosystem. They'll buy and transact and move the coins around for you, and they'll give you a portal that you could sign in with them, and they'll handle your account where it's insured. So if they get hacked and they lose all their Bitcoins, they have insurance to protect them against that. They are filing with the SEC. Why? I don't know. Probably because they want to play by the stupid, rules of the financial world. But that keeps them on a level playing field. They're legit. Let's put it that way. So they've got their banking license. They've got their SEC filing, financial transaction license, whatever. And then they're insured. And then if you start an account with them, you're just saying that they'll hold on to your Bitcoin for you. And so they'll handle a lot of the security of keeping your wallet safe and things like that. You just have to remember your login information. So as long as you can, get a computer access, then you can start a Coinbase account, and then you can link your smartphone, if you wanted to your Coinbase account and walk around and pay for things with Bitcoin using your smartphone by accessing your wallet through Coinbase. There are other providers that do that kind of stuff. Circle is another one. Circle is another app, and I think they deal with some other blockchain currencies. Right now, Coinbase only deals in Bitcoin and Ethereum. So they're limited to the number of, you know, there's hundreds more coins that people can kind of buy right now. And these coins are all simply like penny stocks. They're just kind of waiting around for people to realize either that they have value or maybe they just didn't do it right and they don't have value. The nice thing about Bitcoin is that the Ecosphere believes that they're worth about $10 billion because there's $10 billion of transactions, worth of, you know, transactions that could be done on Bitcoin, meaning there's 15 million Bitcoins that have been mined. There's only going to be 21 million in existence. So this network can run for 100 years mining more Bitcoin, but really we're at, you know, we're three quarters of the way through mining all the coins. So it's deflationary. They're only going to go up in value as people realize it's digital scarcity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it doesn't mean, though, that we can't use that as a base financial transaction for our contracts. And that's what's got me so excited when you keep coming back to the currency aspect of it. You know, there's money transfers in almost every, or some sort of value transfer in almost every agreement, no matter what it is. And so even if you're going to assimilate into a smart contract using maybe a related software or platform that's not dealing in currency, I guess that's your answer there. You would suggest that they just do some research and look at some different types of things like Coinbase, but not for currency, maybe for recordation purposes or, you know.
Well, Litecoin is actually really good as a currency. I mean, there's a really good currency. Like, if you really want to do, like, buy a cup of coffee with a cryptocurrency, the best currencies out there are like Dash and Litecoin. Ether's really good for it, too. It's just a matter of having an ecosystem. You know, for example, I went to my one of my best scientists out there that works on Bitcoin. Gave me a great example. He's up in Montana, and he walked by a store. It was a hobby store, and it said, "We accept Bitcoin." And because of that, he walked in and bought $150 worth of fun because he just wanted to.
Because he could.
And so what? Yeah, and so take it from the proprietor's point of view. Here's a guy who just decided, well, here's an exchange methodology that I understand, and if my customers understand it, then I can do transactions that are far better than credit card transactions. Because even a credit card transaction, if I spend $150 in your store, the proprietor has to wait about a week before that clears. What if the person who ran that credit card said, "Yeah, I think I was ripped off," and they run a report that says, "No, I didn't actually go there," or whatever? They can reverse that charge. So, and they're paying 3% or 4% or 5% to have that access to those credit. Yeah. So, as a proprietor, you know, if you like were anywhere near a college and weren't using Bitcoin, you'd be crazy. But chances are they're popping up everywhere. These college towns, the kids go out there. They learn about it, then they want to start using it, so they go to their coffee shop, they say, "Hey, start accepting this as a form of payment, and I'll come here more often," you know, things like that. So that's what's really the slowdown of the adoption. It's easy to adopt, but it's slow, just like smartphones. You know, you can build 40 million smartphones, but getting 40 million of them sold into the hands of people and those people educated to use them and blah, 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 that took many, many years to get up to that level.
I'll say this. I like everything about it. I like what I'm hearing. I'm excited to set this up online. We're probably just going to have to get together and network together a little bit more and find some of these people.
Yeah,
who
with
are
you guys,
using,
I'm always available.
Using base functions, you know, using base contracting, programming, stuff like that, that we can build on. Because I have like 1,000 ideas right now just based on this conversation of how to build a smart contract.
Based on our last conversation, our last show, we're talking about, you know, intentional communities. That's what everybody's using this for, really. I mean, there are so many intentional communities now being developed with blockchain technologies. It's not even funny. I mean, the panarchy is happening. I call it the panarchy because it sounds like panic or pandemonium, but it really is a kind of an anarchistic, you know, default anarchy going on, which just means no rules.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but we got about 3 minutes left. So if you want to go ahead and we'll do this example here, and we're going to have to bring you on for another show because there's just so much more we got to talk about. We'll touch on smart contracts again, maybe some actual examples. But just real quick, I'm ready to go if you'll just walk me through it.
Oh, great. Are you on Coinbase?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm imagining that there's a screen there that says sign in or sign up or log in. Yep. So just go through your sign-up screen. Mm-hmm. I always recommend people write this down, even though they should burn it later or destroy it later. But, you know, as a mental, remember your password, make it a good one. And then there's also a two-step authentication process where you can tie your cell phone to it, where it says, anytime I'm trying to get into my Bitcoin wallet, not only check my name and password, but then send me a verification code on my smartphone device or phone device, and then I'll type that in. And so make sure you turn that on, because that two-stage authentication gives you better than banking security.
Okay, perfect.
And that's
looks good so far. I'm already in.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay, so like, yeah, it's basically just a signing in thing and setting everything up and tying your bank account together. I thought it was a lot
if
more involved than
to.
That.
I want to point this out. You do not need a bank account to do that. Now, the bank account, the reason why, you know, it's like I have cash sitting in my hand. How do I go buy a Bitcoin? You can't just magically push cash through the screen and buy a Bitcoin. So, you know, that's going through the legacy network. If you do still have a bank account, most people I know, we're off the banking system now. So, but for those that are still, you know, trusting that system and they have a bank account, then they can go in and assign their Coinbase account to that bank so that when they cash out coins, they can send it to the bank. If they wanted to buy coins, they can use funds in that bank account to buy it. But the processing time, the 3 or 4 day processing time it takes, is entirely based on the slowdown of the banking system. If you had that wallet set up, you might have it by the time I finish the sentence, who knows. I can send you any amount of money. Yeah. So if you've got a wallet, I'll tell you what, you can email that wallet address to me and I can send you coins right now that you could verify within 10 minutes. If we were on any other networks, they take a lot, they move a lot quicker. So for example, right. Litecoin, I can do within a few minutes, you know, like a few minutes, you have a verification. So it's a radically, radically cool thing that we're playing with now. And there are no rules in this. We're making them up as we go along. So we're very frontiersy here. And
excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, Frank, we're at the end of our show. We're definitely going to have you back on here. I know you're trying to get as much information out as possible. We really appreciate that. We covered a lot of topics here. Corey, thank you as well.
You touched on some really important points.
Always
a pleasure.
Yeah, man.
And so also, just real quick, next week, I want to let our listeners know that we are either going to have Winsong Movement, or we'll be speaking with a gentleman named Damien, who worked in the mortgage and international financial transactions. I'm having a brain fart with that one. And he's actually tied into the Bloomberg terminals through his employment systems, and he can see the nature of every single transaction that was conducted on these mortgages and these home loans and these promissory notes and these, you know, all these different cross acceptances and these types of things that are happening to a person that's termed a borrower when they go in and they issue a loan on their own credit, which is the true nature of what's happening. So we're going to get into that. And it's funny that we spoke a lot about currency and money because there's a lot of money to be had in recovering your fraud if you've ever been defrauded by these banks. And he has a proven track record of techniques and all sorts of other things that he can utilize to get these things just completely erased and get you money back. He's not selling any type of service. He just wants to come on and explain basically his theory of fraud, the prevailing theory of fraud that he's found in the bank's modus operandi, if you will, and then just explain the solution on how to work from there. So we'll either have one of those two, and then whoever doesn't make it on next week will be the next week behind them. And we have a lot of new exciting guests for the rest of the year. Negotiation Station is still ongoing. I've been making a lot of calls and negotiations with resorts around the world regarding some workshops that we want to do. And Corey and I are working pretty hard on that. And so I just want to wrap up today's show and say thank you very much for listening. You can find us on LinkedIn under Corey Stevens or Jordan Michael Askew. We're also plagging at Piercing the Veil 86. Also, anybody from Plague who's listening, thank you very much. And you guys just look within, and we'll see you next week.